I began to apply what I was learning to myself, using my own mind and body as a testing lab and sharing my results online. My shape changed. I lost weight, toned up, became physically stronger, emotionally more resilient, mentally happier and more purposeful. My skin changed, becoming plumper, more toned and less saggy than before. My hair grew back thicker and fuller. I had to start cutting my nails with scissors, and they no longer flaked or developed the ridges of aging. My cellulite almost disappeared, and my sleep dramatically improved. I began to feel as though I was finally pulling myself out of a dulled state of disarray, up and out into the light, back into a world of optimism and hope, where I felt so much better able to cope with the challenges and tough times all of us face all around us. As I celebrated my 60th birthday in 2023, I became even more aware of the passing of time and its impact on my physique and psyche. I asked myself two fundamental questions. What do I need to do for myself now to live and age well? And two, how best to share what works to help others do the same? This book is the answer to those two simple questions. Well, that's an extract from my new book, A Better Second Half. I'm Lizelle, and this is the Lizelle Wellbeing Show, the podcast with a mission to help us all not just survive, but thrive in later life by investing in our health and our well-being today. And really, there is no better manifestation of all of that than my new book. And it's taken several years in the making, and I am so delighted to be talking about it today. Its publication day is April the 25th, and you can pre-order it now so that it arrives literally on publication day. And I want to take this opportunity to have a deep dive into some of the areas that I cover in the book. And I am so thrilled to be joined by the esteemed broadcaster, host of the Midpoint podcast and fellow midlife activist, Gabby Logan, as we talk about midlife and beyond, how to navigate our journeys through it with practical, easy and economical ways to literally dial back our age so that we can live a longer, happier and healthier life. From food to fitness, hormones and brain boosters to sleep. And yeah, even sex.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Lizelle, it's great to meet you. Great to be here.
Thank you.
And to have an opportunity to chat to you. How does it feel for me to be turning the tables?
It feels weird. I am very nervous, I think, because, well, you know what it's like as a podcast host. You know, you're the one in control and asking the questions. And yeah, I mean, you can ask me anything.
Well, it's all about you, so there's no trick questions. Let's go
back.
That's
true. No wrong answer.
No, exactly. Let's take you back a little bit and find out why you decided that you wanted, first of all, to write a better second half and talk about the beginning of your second half, if you like. Maybe go back 20 years and tell us what was going on with you in your life then.
So 20 years ago, I was in a very different place, to be really honest with you. You know, I was 40. And just going through, I guess, kind of midlife and that awful kind of expression, the sandwich generation, when I was bringing up younger children, looking after older parents, running a career. I was also running an organic farm and a charity and a big business. It was before Kim and I sold the beauty company. So there was a lot going on with that. And it was just a crazy time. And I think looking back on it, I'd definitely have a sense that I lost myself. You know, I was somebody else's mother, wife, boss, colleague, friend, whatever. But, you know, for me, if you'd asked me back then what I was doing for myself in terms of looking after my mental health, physical health, I would have sort of looked at you as if you were a bit kind of crazy. It's like, well, that's very selfish, isn't it, to look after yourself? And I think what I've realized now is that self-care is not selfish. It's a fundamental. And unless we look after ourselves, we don't have full capacity to look after other people. Mm. So, you know, it's like they say on a plane, isn't it? You know, put on your own mask before helping somebody else, because then you're better able to help. Mm-hmm. And so I think my life was very different. I was definitely very low down on my own priority list. I probably didn't even feature on it at all. And I didn't realize the importance of kind of moving myself up a little bit so I could be better equipped to be there for others as well as for myself.
So in terms of the physical manifestation of that, what was going on with your body at that stage?
So I was beginning to be perimenopausal, I guess certainly by mid-40s, but I didn't know it. It was crazy, isn't it? Having worked in the world of wellness for more than 30 years, I hadn't even heard the term perimenopause. And, you know, I've had 5 children, so I've had 5 dealings with obstetricians, midwives, health visitors, you know, gynaes, all of that. At no point did anybody ever say to me, do you know what, Liz, when you get into your 40s, chances are that you'll begin to feel a bit different. You may have low mood, you may have some anxiety, you may have difficulty sleeping. That's completely normal. Your estrogen levels will be fluctuating, and come to us and we can talk about it and we can work out a way to help you. At no point did anybody say that. So when I started to get perimenopausal symptoms, I never had a hot flush, ever, but I had issues sleeping. I did have anxiety looking back, and stress. I thought it was just a busy life. Mm. I thought the reason that I didn't sleep was because I was busy, I was stressed.
Had you always been a good sleeper that suddenly became an erratic sleeper, or was sleep
yes,
a problem?
Yes, I think I've always been a good sleeper. I'm certainly a very good sleeper now, thankfully. So I think it was a shock, but it was at a time when I was living on adrenaline. Work was busy. Kim and I were selling the beauty company. I was on a lot of transatlantic flights. I was living on caffeine and cocktails and late nights and all of the bad
stuff.
Fun
for a while doesn't work well for the long term.
It's exactly. And, you know, my marriage was kind of falling apart, and the kids were, you know, early teens, stressy, pushing boundaries.
Their own hormones going on?
Their hormones, my hormones. So it was a fairly potent mixture going on in the house. And I got a lot of headaches, really splitting headaches. I would always travel with ibuprofen in my bag. And again, you know, the minute I realized that it was due to lowered estrogen, life, you know, completely changed. But it was not a happy time looking back. And I was probably drinking too much alcohol, staying up too late, waking myself up in the morning with strong cups of coffee, and not doing any of the things that I talk about now that have made such a difference, which is why I'm so keen to promote the book, because I think there are a lot of women out there who are probably in the same situation or similar, or who can relate. And I'm not a gym bunny. I'm not a crazy, you know, I've never been an athlete. I've always been, you know, the last to be picked for any team. I'm not a sports person. And those kind of things that don't come naturally to me. So I've had to find very small, easy things that I can fit into my life as a midlife woman. And to be really honest with you, I feel better, fitter, happier, stronger now at 60, soon to be 61, than I think at any other point in my life.
That's incredible, isn't it? And is there a bit of you that thinks, oh, I wish I'd had those tools a bit earlier.
Yeah.
I wish I'd known a little bit
yeah,
more.
I'd like to shortcut everybody else, maybe in your 30s, 40s, 50s. A, it's never too late anyway. So, I biohack my mum, and she's late 80s. You know, I'm always turning up with the latest thing. She's currently on lion's mane and creatine. And, you know, I put her on it back on HRT in her 80s because she was having issues sleeping. So, you know, it is never too late to make a difference. But obviously, the earlier you can do it, very keen for my daughters, for example, to read this book, so they don't actually then end up feeling that they've fallen so far away that it's a struggle to get back on track. But I think there is a bit of me that thinks, I wish I'd known about this sooner. But I think you can't look back. There's no point. That you can
and
only
you've
look
learned
forward.
So much. And did you have trouble with UTIs as well?
Yes, absolutely. So, and again, I didn't realize that my UTIs were a result of lowered estrogen. So I was on kind of nuclear strength antibiotics for quite a long time.
That's not good either.
Not good. Having written a book on gut health, it's like, what is this? And I had very invasive, I had like vaginal ultrasound scans and all sorts because nobody could figure out what was going wrong. And I saw a top Harley Street gynecologist who just prescribed antibiotics and scans. And again, at no point did somebody say, just have some vaginal estrogen and they'll go away. And lo, I did. And they did. And they've never been an issue since. And again, I feel really strongly that women need to know about this stuff because it's simple, safe and effective.
So you say, as you sit here on the precipice of your 61st birthday, that you actually feel as good as you ever have.
Yeah.
And how you feel about yourself is aligned with that.
I think so. You know, I'm sitting here, for example, in a sleeveless dress, and I would not have done that even in my 20s because I had no definition. I had no tone and strength in my arms. I think back in the day, I joined a gym. I used to go and do step classes and like Jane Fonda style aerobics. It was never anything about strength or tone or weight resistance exercises. Now I just do 10 minutes in the morning of a few push-ups or maybe, you know, a few bicep curls with some dumbbells I happen to keep under my bed. And those kind of things have changed my shape and given me more tone. And I'm probably heavier. If I get on the scales, I can give myself a bit of a fright because I am quite heavy, which is why I'm very against things like BMI tables. Because according to a BMI metric, you know, I'm overweight because I'm heavy, but I have a lot of muscle. Mm. And obviously muscle weighs heavier than fat.
And it's so important, resistance training for all of us. Once you get beyond the age of 30 in terms of the way we retain muscle becomes so much harder. And it is so important for the strength of our skeleton and the strength of our bones. And
absolutely.
Thankfully, there seems to be a societal shift in understanding that women who do weights don't necessarily want to enter, you know, Mrs. Universe. Because I think that was the kind of 80s paranoia, wasn't it? Yeah. Oh, you don't want to do weights. You don't want to end up
And we're not going to bulk.
No, you're going to have to spend your life eating protein and nothing else, aren't you, if you're going to do that?
Yeah. No, it's. I wish I'd learnt that earlier, actually. Yeah. But yes, I feel more confident in myself. Maybe I also feel happier. But I think when you get older, you have the wisdom and the experience as well, which is helpful. In terms of confidence, and you reach a stage in life, hopefully, when you know who you are, you have your group of friends, you know how you like to dress, where you like to live, how you like to spend your day, your time. Maybe having a bit more time. My children are older now, so mostly self-sufficient, not entirely. They call them the boomerang generation, don't they? Because they keep coming back, you know, because they can.
But they're good company now. And rather than being, you know, you'd have to drive them around everywhere. You don't have to kind of be responsible for their routines and their lives.
Yeah, my son has just passed his driving test. He now drives me, which is excellent.
It's always lovely when you get those bonus. I sometimes have to slip them a tenner because they tell me how expensive petrol is.
That's true.
But generally, it's good. It's a fun time, isn't it? When your kids start getting their wings and they're... Yeah. And they're flying off.
Yeah.
And that adds, I think, to confidence as well.
Yeah, and just having these open and honest conversations with them. And actually, one of the key things that I learned through my daughters was the art of journaling. And they're very, I think the younger generation are quite aware of mental health, because I think so many of them have been so badly affected by it, you know, particularly after lockdowns and all of that, that they are aware of the practices that they need to do that are helpful. And I used to think that when I would see them doing their journals, I used to think, oh, that's very sweet, you know, doing their little writings. And so being a bit dismissive of it. And then I started to keep a gratitude journal for myself. And oh my gosh, the difference it's made, just writing those few lines in the morning sets you up for the day. What are you grateful for? I mean, I mean so much. How long have you got? I'm grateful that I woke up. That's the first thing. That I'm not in pain. I have a safe bed to sleep in. I've got water that comes out of a tap and the sun is shining. I can hear the birds. My eyes work, my ears work, you know, there's so much. And that just puts you in that right frame of mind right from the get-go, the minute you put a foot out of bed.
Do you do that before you even get out of bed?
Sometimes, or I take my journal with me and step outside. That's usually the first
to get those,
of the day.
Those natural kind of rays, that sunlight, that's important.
Yeah, that early light. Mm. In fact, now what I do is I don't turn my phone on. I don't even switch a light on until I've seen proper light outside. And if I can't physically get outside, I will just open a window and make sure that I can see my eyes, those retinal cells, get proper daylight. And hopefully, I'm not really a morning person at all, but getting up closer to daybreak mm-hmm. so that you get more of the near infrared mm-hmm. rather than the UV. And that sort of setting up the hormonal rhythm for the day is, I think, really important.
Do you know your biological age? Which
yes.
is different to the chronological age.
It is. And this is a really interesting point. So especially because I have a much younger boyfriend and I do tease him about this because my biological age, well, it depends how you test it. There are lots of different methods of testing it. Mm. The one test I did, I came out as 39. More recently, I tested at 45, which I was a bit peeved about because I kind of still wanted to be like in my 30s, really. But, you know, he did point out that being 15 years younger is not bad.
No.
But I think there are ways that we can dial it down. So I did something called a glycan age test, which put me at 45, which is basically to do with inflammation.
Inflammation markers in the... And is that a blood test?
That's a blood test. Really mm-hmm. simple, but very profound in what they're testing for. And I'm doing various strategies at the moment, which I'm hoping will dial it back. So when I retest, maybe in 6 months or so, hopefully I'll be younger than 45.
Because inflammation markers, as people might know, are so important, aren't they, in terms of predetermining various diseases and illnesses. And they can tell us about things that are wrong in our body currently that we might not be aware of.
And I think having that as a yardstick is really useful as a tool. Because sometimes you can do that test and you're actually on a cellular level, you're older than your chronological age. So
not good.
That's not good at all. And I think, you know, when we think about aging, what really matters is our biological age. It's how old our cells are, what the age response is of our cells, because that determines how well we age and our propensity to get a degenerative disease or to, you know, have mental incapacity and all of that, which of course we want to avoid. So it's not really how many years you've lived on the planet. Mm. It's kind of how old your cells say you are. Mm.
Yeah. And it's not also, I think it's really important, isn't it, to detach it from an obsession with kind of a youthful appearance. It's a byproduct, obviously, if you're looking after yourself, that you will look healthier and better. But actually, it's as you get to this age and these years, you want to have the best quality of life, don't you?
Yeah. It's about, people talk about health span rather than age span. And I think that's increasingly a metric that we're going to be looking at. And it's like, how healthy are you? How fit are you? It's about staying strong. It's like, you know, I don't think of my body now in terms of slimness. It's much more to do with strength and, you know, how much I can lift. You know, how many push-ups I can do or how far I can walk.
It's so empowering.
It's really empowering. Feeling physically strong, I think, makes you feel mentally and emotionally better able to cope with all the stuff, you know, that life chucks at us.
You might not have to lift a sofa over your head, but you never know when you're going to. So I read something that somebody who was in the similar age bracket saying the reason they carry on weightlifting is because they want to keep moving their own furniture around. And I don't
love
know this person's got an obsession with moving the furniture, but I don't want to have to get a man in to move my furniture.
Absolutely right. love
arms looking in great shape, loving the resistance training. What else do you do to keep the body...
I try and remember to move more. So I have quite a sedentary job because I spend a lot of time researching, writing, sitting at a desk, podcasting, sitting, you know, all of that. And so I try and remember every hour at least to get up and walk around and move my body and also vary the things that I do. So I think that one of the things I've learned is that the body loves variety. Mm-hmm. So I'll go for a long walk one morning, or a short run the next day, or a yoga class the following day, or a few weights the next day, the following day, maybe some squats and some push-ups. So every day in the week, I try and do something that's a little bit different, to use different muscle groups, you know, to get your fast twitch and your slow twitch fibers, and some of it's weight bearing, some of it's more endurance and resistance, some of it's quite short, explosive bursts, like a quick sprint and then a walk and then a quick sprint.
And you say you're not an athlete.
seriously not an athlete.
So this is all under the umbrella of epigenetics, this area of looking at markers in the body to get the biological age. And it's an area that you feel is going to become more and more important.
Definitely. And I kind of start the book off actually talking about epigenetics, which I think is an amazing branch of science, because if you think about genetics, we are dealt our genes at birth. Mm-hmm. We can't control our genes. That's who we are. That's our genetic makeup. But the epigenetic bit is how we express those genes the gene expression. So I liken it to a deck of cards. You get dealt the cards from the deck, and those are your genes. But how you play those cards depends on the outcome. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot that we can do to influence. So even if you've not been dealt a great hand, mm-hmm. and you know many of us aren't, you can still play really well. Mm-hmm. And you can still improve your life and make
that
a difference.
Could be through supplements that you need to take to yeah. help you, or it could be through reducing things in your
yeah.
diet.
Lifestyle, the kinds of foods that you are better suited to eating. Mm-hmm. You know, no kind of one size fits all in terms of diet, although there are general rules. Mm. You know, generally high protein, low carb is sort of generally what works for pretty much everybody. But yes, you know, things like your tolerance to alcohol or caffeine, mm-hmm. for example, you know, will be down to your genes.
You mentioned alcohol before. Was it through yeah. doing the testing that you decided not to drink alcohol?
No, I was actually going out with somebody who was teetotal. So that was kind of, and I thought, do you know what? I'd been to a fasting clinic and didn't drink, obviously, because I didn't even eat.
Didn't taste so, there wasn't much going on there.
Let alone any alcohol. And I did feel better for it. And I think coming out of lockdown, where I think so many of us actually probably drank a bit more than we should have done, I was certainly guilty of that. And thinking I just need to probably get on top of this a bit. And I did feel good. But I actually now, I have gone back to drinking alcohol, and I don't drink that much. I'm quite selective about what I drink. I drink red wine, but I filter it. I use a sulfite filter to get rid of the sulfites because they don't make me feel so great in the morning. Or I'll drink something like vodka or tequila, which are very kind of clean spirits, with a bit of soda water or a bit of tonic water or maybe a little bit of juice or kombucha. I love a kombucha martini because then you get the probiotic benefit of the kombucha with just that little hint of vodka.
And that, as we get older, people will observe, won't they, the kind of way alcohol makes them feel is different.
Yes.
And again, this is all part of the hormonal journey. And
definitely. Yeah, perimenopause, estrogen affecting how we process alcohol. I'm quite fortunate in that I've had all my liver enzymes checked, and I do process alcohol very well, which is a good thing because my body's able to cope with it. But also it probably means that I feel sometimes that I can get away with it a bit more than I should. And again, that's a personal thing. You know, some people can process alcohol better than others. So I think it's about learning your limits and then living within those parameters. Mm. You kind of realize what your body will let you do and the things that it doesn't like.
Well, sometimes
doing.
You found those things out naturally, and then a test might confirm.
Exactly.
My husband stopped drinking coffee because it didn't make him feel good. And when he had his testing done, he was very badly, you know, kind
really?
Of, well, he was advised that he shouldn't be drinking coffee.
He shouldn't drink coffee.
And he'd already stopped.
Yeah.
But he didn't know why, you know, and sometimes
those
are really interesting.
It's a gene expression.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. So I have two gene responses to caffeine. I have a very strong response to caffeine, which is why I love it, because my body goes, oh, yes, this is great. So I get up and I have my caffeine fix in the morning, but I don't process the caffeine that well. So therefore, I stop at lunch. So I've got that kind of 10 to 12 hour window to get it processed out of my system before going to bed.
But other people can...
They're fine.
Yeah.
They can process it. And it's...
Yeah. And there's some people just don't like the taste of it. But it has... No. It does. It's amazing how something so simple, seemingly so simple, has such a different effect on us.
Yeah.
What other lifestyle changes have you made through the results of your testing?
So I take a supplement called glutathione now. So, and this was fascinating actually, because about a third of us in the UK can't make glutathione. Through our genetic response. So basically, glutathione is an amazing nutrient. I'm amazed that actually we don't know more about it. You know, we hear all about vitamin C and our B vitamins and all of that. But glutathione is the master antioxidant, and we make it in the body. So we make it from other antioxidants, things like vitamin C or beta carotene or whatever. But about a third of us, myself included, can't make glutathione. So that was a shock to me. I thought, well, what is glutathione and why can't I make it? And, you know, so as soon as I got the results back, I went out and I bought some liposomal glutathione. And I took some that evening. And I swear to you, Gabby, I woke up the next morning feeling changed.
Wow.
I felt like somebody had put new batteries in me. And I was bright-eyed and full of beans in a way that I hadn't felt. And it was because my body was responding to being given pre-made glutathione. So I now take glutathione.
And is glutathione generally, the glutathione that's in the marketplace, mm-hmm. is it generally typical for what those two-thirds of the population who've already got it yeah. inside them? Is it as close yeah. biologically as,
yeah,
as that?
Absolutely. And the best form to take is liposomal. So meaning it's encapsulated in these little tiny lipid bubbles that slip into your cells. So you don't digest it through the gut where they can get broken down and maybe not absorbed
lost.
So easily, lost, basically lost in transit. Mm. And you know, and you don't actually need an expensive genetic test to tell you. Mm. I would say to anybody, if you're feeling low in energy and you need a bit of a vavoom, try a bit of glutathione. And if it makes you feel better, the chances are that you're somebody who's got that genetic variance that means that you need it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I remember asking the nutritionist at the time, you know, how come I got away with it for so long if it's so fundamental? And she said, well, you eat really well. You're eating lots of other antioxidants. So your body is running on those mm-hmm. and that's fine. So, you know, you feel well. But it's funny when you feel well and then suddenly you feel even better. You don't realize how much better you can feel. Mm. I think that's the really empowering thing with all of this is even people, you know, listening today or watching today will think, yeah, but, you know, I feel okay. And you go, okay, that's great. Mm-hmm. But how much better can we feel? Mm-hmm. It's about not about just sorting out any potential deficiencies. It's about optimizing so that we feel better than ever and really have more energy than we know what to do with. Mm-hmm. You know, we're just so raring to go and full of life and vigor and strength.
And so this was something that came directly from the results of those tests.
It was, yeah.
Any other lifestyle changes that
avoiding caffeine, mm-hmm. definitely. I'm also genetically a night owl, which I kind of knew because I'm really happy working late into the small hours. But that's not good for us. It's not good for your circadian rhythm. And I know all these things. I know I should be getting up and watching daybreak. And I naturally don't do that. So, you know, I'm just aware. I guess I'm a bit gentler with myself because I understand that genetically my body is saying, you really ought to be staying in bed. But yeah, I know that my brain needs to say to my body, actually, I'm sorry, love, but you've got to get up now because we need to go and watch the sunrise.
So you've given yourself a little bit, cut yourself a bit of slack, but also said, no, this is much better for me. And you see the results of that.
I need to override my genes. Mm. And I guess that's what you can do when you understand genetically how your body's operating. You can then stress it a bit because you know that that's the right thing to do.
Let's talk, shall we, about food, which,
right.
You know, this is an area that I think people have been yes. listening to you talk about food and the importance of our diets for a very long time. Since you're about 28, you wrote Vital Oils.
I did. Yeah. yeah.
Remind everybody what that book was about.
So this really, Vital Oils was my first book and it came out two things, really. One, I had very bad eczema as a child and as a teenager. And I was given a lot of prescription steroids and I thought that the only way to control it was to put a topical unguent on my skin. Then I interviewed a naturopath who said, well, no, you need to look at your diet and have lots of healthy fats. And this was at a time when everybody was talking about low fat, no fat, even strip everything, all the fats and oils out of the diet. It was all about your low fat yogurt and all of this. And anyway, so I went on a relatively high fat diet, started taking oil supplements like evening primrose oil, using extra virgin olive oil, and lo, my skin transformed. And for me, it was a real light bulb moment. It was that real connection that we make skin cells from within. It's not just what we put on the skin, it's what we put in. And that led to me writing Vital Oils, which was counterculture because everybody was saying, take fat out of the diet. And of course, if you do that, A, your skin falls apart, but also we need healthy fats for our hormones mm-hmm. and for brain health. You know, our brain is, the majority is fat in our brain, EPA and DHA, you know, the omega-3s. So we need these good, healthy fats. And, you know, I was one of the first to write about the dangers of trans fats, for example, and hydrogenated fat. I was nearly sued by a major margarine manufacturer for daring to suggest that their margarine that comes in a yellow pack with sunflowers on it, you know, was potentially unhealthy. And now, of course, they've taken all the trans fats out, which is good. But at the time, it was, you know, I was seen as a bit of a maverick, as somebody who was you know,
out there.
Too far out there. And, you know, who are you and what are you talking about? And now, of course, we understand everyone's talking about pro-inflammatory seed oils and the dangers of hardening, hydrogenating fats, and that actually sugars are the bad guys, not fats.
Yeah. And so from there, you presumably kind of had differing relationships with carbohydrates and protein. Yeah. And we find you today as somebody with a fairly high protein diet.
Yeah, high protein. In fact, I find it hard to get enough protein. I try and eat 90 grams of protein a day. And that's hard because I tend to only eat two meals a day. I don't really do breakfast. So I tend to do brunch and then dinner. And I find that if I do high fat, high protein, I don't snack in the afternoon. I don't get hungry. That you know, those foods fill me up. It's the carbs that give you the sugar crashes. And
All the very things that we would have grown up people saying were breakfast foods. And you look back now and think, the most terrible things to be putting in your body.
Oh, Mr. Kellogg has done a great job. You know, the get up and you must have a bowl of cereal or a piece of toast or something before, you know, getting on with your day. Nonsense.
Yeah, and then wondering why at 10:30 you feel like going back to bed and reaching for a sugary snack to try and boost yourself.
And the whole snack culture. Mm-hmm. Everywhere you go, you're surrounded by snacks, and it's become kind of normal to grab a snack. You know, every time you stop at a petrol station or you catch a train or whatever, it's there, isn't it, right in front of you? Snack, snack, snack. And actually, we know that we need to have proper gaps between our meals and not snack to rest the gut and just eat those full meals and avoid snacking.
Just before we take a break, you mentioned the gut, and I know gut health has also been a big part of your nutritional journey, and you've written about that as well.
Yeah.
Would you say that is kind of at the forefront of your mind when you're thinking about food, how it affects your gut?
I definitely make sure that I eat a lot of fermented foods. So, for example, I had a shake this morning. I knew I was rushing. It was a busy day, and I wasn't going to get much protein in, so I made a high-protein shake. But I put extra kefir in it for my gut. So I do tend to look at my food throughout the day and think, how have I supported my gut? Have I had enough plant fiber? Have I had some probiotics or some prebiotics, like, you know, things that contain inulin, for example, that will feed my gut bugs? And have I had my kefir and kombucha to support my gut?
And anybody listening who is new to gut health and is wondering kind of how they can support themselves, what would be some...
Yeah, really super easy. You know, take it slow. That's the key thing, because if your gut has not been used, your lovely gut microbes have not been used to getting all this beneficial bacteria, it can be a bit explosive. You know, you can get a bit of bloating and some diarrhea and all that while your system settles down. So take it slowly. I would say the first thing to do is to buy some kefir, and widely available in every supermarket. You don't have to get the expensive kind of designery kind. If you go to the Polish section of the supermarket, you can buy these big liter containers of kefir for not very much. And just start with a small glassful in the morning and see how good you feel.
Why don't we pause there, have a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk about sex and menopause and identity as we age.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape.
And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Okay, should we kick off with menopause? We've touched on it quite a bit, actually, because it comes into so many areas of a woman's life.
Yeah, for midlife, you can't get away from the M word. No,
and I like you, had no idea. And I think I'm 10 years behind you in terms of age. That's chronological age.
Yeah.
But I had no idea what the word perimenopause meant until a friend of mine, who's about a year older than me, mentioned it. And probably like you, thought that the menopause was something we'd seen in sitcoms where the woman has lots of hot flushes and, you know, oh, well, I didn't have any of that. So, but then there was a eureka moment on my podcast when a guest started talking about these slightly less obvious symptoms that, oh my gosh, I'm ticking all of these boxes.
So what were your issues?
Just a little bit more ratty.
I know that one.
Finding I had short fuse and patience with things that previously I would have had a little bit more time for, usually my kids. They bore the brunt of that, I would think, probably, because, you know, you kind of put a mask on, don't you, when you in other situations. Feeling that things were a bit meh, you know, nothing seemed to give me the joy.
That flatness.
Yeah.
It's really, that's the, I think one of the most awful things actually is this numbness, the lack of joy. And it is that feeling flat. And that's why so many women, I think, are prescribed antidepressants.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, there's no clinical evidence to show that an antidepressant will help menopausal low mood caused by low estrogen. The only thing that's going to help is estrogen, because that's what your brain receptors are lacking. That's why you feel bad. And that's why you need to top it back up.
And of course, if you're for the first time in your life experiencing that, because I'd always considered myself to be somebody that was, you know, well, basically my life, exercise and eating well seemed to have always been my panacea, basically, you know, so I'd enjoy. Well, those things weren't giving me any joy, you know, that the exercise, the endorphins didn't seem to be helping me in the in the way that they had in the past. So that was when I started to think, well, there's maybe other symptoms I hadn't heard of, you know, and then you start investigating and reading and realizing there's a whole host of things.
I think I've listed 45 in the book, but that there are more. And actually, one of the surprising symptoms for me, which, you know, I'd love people to be more aware of, is that the auricular changes in the ear, because I started to get tinnitus and I was really scared that this was going to be like a lifelong diagnosis for me.
I've never heard of that before.
And it can also disrupt your kind of vestibular balance.
Of course.
So women get vertigo, dizziness. And it's because we have estrogen receptors in our ears.
Who knew?
Everywhere, you know? Exactly. And I didn't realize, I'd probably been on HRT for about a year, and I suddenly realized I don't have any more ringing in my ears. And then I looked into it, and I was talking to Dr. Louise Newson, and we did a podcast about it, and she said, oh yeah, it's really common. It's really common that tinnitus. And again, talking to audiologists and hearing clinics, how many women, midlife women, go to their doctor suffering from tinnitus or go to a hearing aid clinic or whatever, with hearing disturbances or hearing loss even, and nobody's joining the dots. Mm-hmm. It's the same with dentistry. I was talking to a dentist about what the changes that happen in the mouth because we lose estrogen from our gums. And that causes tooth sensitivity and gum receding and all of that. And it's like, this is a sure sign that you need to replace your estrogen if you're going to keep healthy mouth and teeth and gums.
There are many areas, aren't there, that estrogen can help.
Every area.
But very few recognized in the NICE guidelines, which has led to some confusion, and women get bombarded in many ways. And nowadays, I mean, it didn't used to be like that, but with different messages about whether they should, they shouldn't. And the thing that I don't know about you that comes through people who write into me through my podcast, the kind of questions they want to ask the experts who come on. The overriding one always seems to be, should I? You know, it's this real kind of reticence.
Yeah.
In some way, it's almost, I compared it at the very beginning of doing a podcast on midlife to going back to baby days when people were really nervous about any kind of pain relief in childbirth and how somehow they were letting the side down if they did. And it feels a bit like we're going through that with HRT, somehow I've got to battle through this.
Do you know, you would not say to a diabetic, do you know, I really think you should try and avoid the insulin. You know, I think you should just, you know, maybe have a nap in the afternoon, have a lie down, and let's do some, you know, CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, and some breath work. You know, you just wouldn't say that, would you? And you wouldn't say that to somebody who needed thyroxine, who had a thyroid issue. These are hormones. Mm. And so why you would say to a woman who's losing her estrogen in midlife, suffering often debilitating, crippling health symptoms, oh, I don't think you should have your hormones back, you know. I mean, it's just ridiculous. It's so antiquated. And I write actually in the book, in one of the chapters, I write about the patriarchal medical system. And you only have to not go back very far to realize that most modern prescription drugs have never been tested on women. Mm-hmm. So how do they work with our own estrogen levels? Well, I've got no idea. Never tested them. So it seems a sort of women's issues that it's all to do with
just
periods.
Just the 51% of the planet then.
Exactly. Only just over half the population, you know, and doctors aren't trained, even in medical school. You know, you might get a couple of hours if you're lucky. And they spend a lot of time studying obstetrics and postnatal health and pregnancy care, and rightly so. But not everybody is going to have a baby. Not every woman's going to have a baby. Every woman will have a menopause if she lives long enough. And 1 in 100 women will have an early menopause. You know, she might be in her 30s. Mm. Or you might get plunged into a surgical menopause because of chemotherapy or medical treatment or hysterectomy or oophorectomy or whatever. So it's, I think we're living in the dark ages, or have been. And I think that my daughter's generation, you know, will be treated hopefully very differently. And they'll look back at this time and they'll say with incredulity, well, what do you mean they expected you to live and survive without your hormones?
Well, you mentioned Dr. Louise Newson there, who's obviously done brilliant work in this space. Mm. And she, I remember listening to a podcast she did, and she said it's not hormone replacement, it's rebalancing. Let's think of it as that, because somehow that seemed to be less offensive to
It's hormone
people.
Deficiency.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't have enough vitamin C, then you know that you need to eat more vitamin C, or you know, have more fruit, or take a vitamin C supplement. You know, if you're deficient in your estrogen, you're not going to live optimally. And I think there's an interesting case for, should women be given prophylactic estrogen earlier on, before you even develop symptoms? And some of the studies looking at brain health, particularly Alzheimer's and dementia, show that the earlier you take replacement estrogen, the better your brain health. I just wish somebody had said to me in my mid-40s, here's some estrogen, because it's going to be good for your brain.
Well, I went to see Dr. Sarah Matthews when I first recognized these perimenopausal symptoms. And obviously not every woman does this, but I decided to have blood tests to find out. And they're not always completely 100% accurate because of the cycle. But I actually hadn't noticed that I was having very few periods, because I've never had particularly massive period issues. Do you know what I mean? They were just there. And she rang me up and she said, are you with somebody? And I thought, oh my gosh, what's she going to tell me? But she later explained that when she delivers this news sometimes to women, they feel very bereft with what she was about to say, which was that she said that she thought I had 2 periods left in my life. And she proved to be absolutely bang on.
Isn't that extraordinary?
Yeah. And she said, you've got about 2 periods left. And I said, really? And I said, no, I'm thrilled. I'm absolutely.
Yeah, great.
And she said, your hormones are so on the floor. She said, I don't know how you're getting up in the morning, and I'd like you to come and see me and get yourself.
Wow. Yeah.
And the effect was so quick. The turnaround was so quick
too.
For me. She also prescribed, because a lot of people assume it's going to be progesterone and estrogen. Yeah. She also prescribed testosterone.
Amazing.
Which I had no fear of, because I had no expectation or previous kind of colouring of my judgment of. I didn't realise, you know, that that was going to also take a nosedive.
Yeah.
So I learned a lot more about that. But it's amazing how many women don't have testosterone prescribed.
It's an absolute scandal. It's a female hormone. We produce 3 times more testosterone in our ovaries than we do estrogen. People think it's just the male hormone, mm-hmm. but it's very much a female hormone. So for me, I was on probably a more conventional journey in that I had estrogen and progesterone, got those balanced, on that for about 6 months or so. And funnily enough, it was Louise who picked up testosterone for me because I was doing a podcast with her. And it was face to face and we were chatting and I was struggling for the odd word, you know, word recall. Mm. I was like, what's it called? It'll come back to me in a moment. Yeah. And it was, and afterwards she said to me, I didn't know her very well then. And she said, actually, Liz, do you mind me saying something personal? I said, no. This was after we'd stopped recording. And she said, I think you might benefit from some testosterone because one of the key signs is word recall, and testosterone is really important for memory loss and cognitive function and mental clarity. Everyone thinks it's just the sex hormone and because it's prescribed for libido and it has, you know, no other kind of clinical data to support it. It's like, again, coming back to that patriarchal system. Oh, you know, she won't have sex with me. Oh, let's give her some more testosterone then because that's going to, you know, impact on the guys here. Not, oh, well, you know, she needs to be thinking straight and have her moods improved and her muscle strength protected because that's all to do with testosterone. So it was, yeah, it was Louise who got me some testosterone in the first instance. And immediately, again, that clarity of thought was just extraordinary. I just, and I can see it now. And I'm sometimes with midlife women and I can see them struggling for words. And if I know somebody really well, I'll turn the conversation and we'll start chatting about testosterone. But otherwise, it's kind of hard, isn't it, to kind of drop that into conversation. Like, by the way, I've noticed that you're struggling, so perhaps you could do with some testosterone. But then, of course, if you can't get it, then that's a real issue.
Also, and I mean, what's happened over the last couple of years as well with the provision of hormones and the regional variations of what's available and where it's available is extraordinary, isn't it, that we're in that situation?
It really is. And also globally. When I talk to friends overseas, it's very interesting because you can go into a pharmacy in Spain or France and you can buy estrogen over the counter. And I've done it. I put it to the test. And yet in some countries, you know, particularly some African countries, they ban the sale of any hormone.
When I went to Qatar for the World Cup, I had to have a note from Sarah explaining what it was because they would remove it potentially at customs, explaining that it was prescribed and why I had to take it. So yeah, we're very lucky in some ways
that we're able to get it, but we need that message, which is why it's great with this podcast because we can go global.
Well, you'll love this then because my sister lives in Nevada and she's a year younger than me. And for me, it sounded like she was having a lot of symptoms and she hadn't really, with family being away and she hasn't got a close-knit group of girlfriends nearby. She went to see her doctor and, of course, being America, you have health insurance and their family health insurance didn't cover HRT, but it did cover, should he need it, Viagra for her husband. So, I mean, if you ever want the Handmaid's Tale kind of writ large, So I said, well, what did the doctor suggest? And she said antidepressants. So, yeah.
But for her to
buy HRT in America was going to cost her about $600 a month. So
you're not serious.
So with no prescription, it was so expensive that it was prohibitive for her to even think about it. So, yeah. And of course, this is a state variation. Wow. All over America, every state has different rules.
It's different.
And I was outraged. And I was fuming. And I said, well, what about your governor? And she said, we've just got a governor who makes Trump look moderate. So we're not in a position where I think there's many people at the top of politics in the state that, want women to. So Louise Newsom kindly did a kind of a Zoom call with her and helped her out. And
it's tragic.
Oh, well, I just thought she's got somebody in the UK she's talking to and has a different experience.
Yes.
Think of all those women who don't have that opportunity. And what are they doing? They may be taking the antidepressants thinking that's going to help. And it may well help one bit of their
journey.
Well,
it'll numb you so that you won't perhaps mind the fact that you feel so shit.
And then all the other symptoms that you've got going on don't get any kind of help at all, do they?
No.
So let's talk about relationships.
Yes.
Because actually the menopause can affect lots of different parts of your close personal relationships in the first instance, can't it? In terms of the person that you spend your life with, if you've got a life partner, but also your friendships and you know, how you view people that might have been in your life for a long time.
No, I mean, I think I wouldn't say that my marriage breakdown was due to the menopause, but it didn't help. For sure. You know, you talk about being ratty. And, you know, I can remember my poor ex-husband, you know, even just his breathing would be annoying. We actually get on very well now, so it's fine. And he still is breathing. So
I was going to say,
okay.
Let's just establish that.
But it's, you know, it's really important to be aware of that, actually, because I think you look at relationship breakdown, marriage breakdown, rates of divorce, et cetera. It's often around that time. It's often around the time that a woman is, you know, early 50s going through menopause and dealing with so many issues, you know, and loss of confidence and anxiety and rage, flashes of rage that come out of nowhere, you know, which really aren't helpful when you're struggling at a time when life is busy anyway and stressful, and and you're feeling that you're losing your looks because your skin is sagging, and, you know, you're beginning to feel that in society is regarding you as invisible, that whole kind of relationship that we have with older women in society not being seen as relevant or useful.
And that's often the person, as you say, that bears the brunt of that, can be the person you're married to or you've been in a long-term relationship with. And that's why I think it is so important for men to understand what's going on. And, you know, my son, who's 18, will take the mickey out of me quite a lot by saying, oh, are you talking about the menopause?
I know. My 21-year-old boy says exactly the same thing. And my 14-year-old, you know, he's very aware.
You're never too young
to
learn
is.
About it. Well, they would understand all about puberty because they're taught about that at school. Yeah. So, you know, I don't see why there shouldn't be half an hour at the back end of that lesson to say, oh, by the way, guys, later on, you may well find yourself in a relationship with a woman who's going through the menopause.
Yeah, or a colleague, or your, you know, tutor, or your mother, your aunt,
You might not be in a relationship with a woman, but you will definitely know one.
Yes, definitely know one. And she will definitely be affected at some point. So, really important life lesson.
So while you don't think that that was the overriding reason for your marriage breaking up, what kind of advice would you give women who are recognising that in their own relationship it's increasingly challenging in this period?
I think, you know, I write quite honestly, I think, in the book about my own situation, and hopefully give some helpful advice on others who might be in a similar situation. And I think over the years, maybe through it's doing podcasts with psychotherapists and relationship counselors, becoming aware of terms like toxic relationships, codependency, gaslighting, coercive control, you know, all of these things which are new to my vocabulary. Certainly when I was growing up, you know, my parents would never have talked about that. And I would never have talked about that with girlfriends even. Narcissism, you know, are you with a narcissist? How is that affecting your behavior?
You know, how do you know you're with a narcissist?
Yeah, exactly. It's, you know, are you one yourself? You know, so all these sort of different behavioral issues that might be going on. And I think there is a real need to wake up to some of these things. And then also ask yourself, if you're in a relationship that doesn't seem to be working and hasn't been working for a long time, can it work? Do you both want it to work? Why isn't it working? And what steps do you need to take to either extricate yourself from that relationship safely or to then build on it and make it work? And I think, you know, one of the questions that's worth asking is, are you in a relationship because you want to be in a relationship or because you're too scared to be on your own? And I know from a lot of girlfriends I speak to, they say, actually, I know it's really bad and it's really tough, but I just don't want to be on my own. And possibly I fell into that category a little bit. I was certainly scared of being on my own. I've never been on my own because I got married the first time when I was 18. So I went straight from college living at home to being married. And then I was only divorced for maybe a year or so. And then I met my second husband and we were together for, you know, best part of 20 years. So it was a big shock for me to suddenly be completely on my own. And I needed that time, actually. I spent a couple of years, didn't date anybody. I was on my own. I was kind of figuring out who I was in all of this and doing things on my own for the very first time. You know, I took myself off to the theatre and on my own, I bought a ticket for one. And I took myself out to dinner and I sat, you know, on my own. Okay, I had a book because I kind of felt I needed to be doing something. But I actually really enjoyed the evening and realized that I didn't need somebody else to complete me. And, you know, if I happen to have somebody else, then that's great. But they're there because I enjoy their company and I feel better for it, not because I need them to be there.
And also, I imagine you went through quite a voyage of discovery about how society and your friendship groups viewed you as a single person.
Yeah, was I seen as a threat? You know, did they want to still invite me to dinner because I was a single woman? Was I just going to be hard to manage on my own?
Hard to manage.
You know, did they have to find another single man? You know, to say, even
did
up
they
the numbers.
Constantly want to set you up. I wish
there was a bit of that. That was quite funny.
But again, that's all the voyage of discovery, isn't it? That I think a lot of people might look at and think it's quite scary. But when you come through the other side and you look back, you have absolutely no regrets, I'm assuming, with what you've been through and how you've come through that.
I've come through, and that's probably why I'm, healthier and happier and feel fitter and stronger and more resilient now, because I know myself much better and I know the things that I like. And also, now being in a new relationship, realizing how actually precious that is and how special that is, and taking time to make sure that I don't fall into the same pitfalls and patterns of behavior that perhaps are less healthy. I think you become more aware perhaps in later life of, if you do then meet somebody and want to have a relationship, of actually what you need to do to protect that.
And there'll be women listening and maybe men listening as well who want to know how you meet people in midlife. Where are they? Did you get yourself on the apps?
Or? Yeah, I tried apps. I actually got blocked from Bumble for impersonating Lizelle. I thought, but it is me. Obviously, I didn't put my real name. And that was, because somebody reported me. They saw my pictures and said, no, that's
They thought you were catfishing.
Yeah, so it's
like how I knew that term, even though I'm not on the on the old apps. But yeah,
I got blocked. But I gather Sharon Stone got blocked as well.
Oh, you're in good company.
So there you go. Me and Shazza. So and I went off the apps. I got very scared. I mean, everybody was on apps, and I thought, well, I'll try it. But it's just a swipey thing, isn't it? It's very superficial. So I stopped it, and then I was just happy on my own. And then I met up with a girlfriend who'd been divorced, and she was just glowing. And I said, what are you doing? And she said, oh, I've met the love of my life. And I said, tell me more. How did you meet? And she said, well, we met online. I said, I'm not doing those swipey apps. And she said, no, this is a website, a dating website. So you should do it. I'm not doing that, So anyway, I went home and I joined. And left it, and probably overshared lots of information, because I came down the next morning to about 90 messages and got completely scared and deleted my profile immediately and waited about a year. And then I was coming back from Kenya and I was thinking, I'm coming back and I'm single and it'd be quite nice to be with somebody. So maybe I'll just reactivate my profile and see what happens. And then very, very quickly, I got a message from this young guy who said, I won't tell you exactly what he said, but he basically said, will you meet me for a cup of coffee? And I thought, I'm not sure about this. I said, yeah, go on, I'll meet you for a cup of coffee. And that was it. We've been together ever since.
Wow. That was timing. Timing's everything, obviously.
Timing
you
is
were
everything.
Ready. You were
I was ready.
Receive.
He was ready. And it was just like, do you know what? This is great.
Now, I'm not going to ask you about the intricacies of this, but...
Oh, what is coming?
I did say we were going to talk about sex.
You did.
If you're leaving a relationship and you're going out into the kind of, the unknown, it's the fear, isn't it? If you've been with somebody for a long time, exposing yourself.
Yeah, I think but it comes down to chemistry, doesn't it? I think if you trust somebody and you really are into them and you connect with them and you just... want to be close to them. And actually, I think that kind of takes the fear away. I think if you're just after a kind of quick jump in the sack, then that might be different. But I think if you've really got a
connection with somebody.
A connection and a kind of, not necessarily a long-term commitment, but it's somebody that you're actually going to be spending some time with.
I think
with.
It has such an important impact on our identity, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I write about sex in the book and I write about it in terms of well-being. Because it's very good for our health. It's very good for physical health, mental health, all those happy chemicals, the endorphins, the oxytocin, which is, the love hormone, which, is produced at orgasm, but it's also produced when you touch somebody's hand. You can be holding somebody's hand or stroking somebody's face, and actually you just feel that euphoria, and that's coming from the oxytocin, which is incredibly good for our immune system and our mental health and our neurotransmitters. So, you can break it down on a purely physical biochemical level. that actually says we're meant to be, we're social beings, we're meant to be connected with other people. If we can be fortunate enough to find somebody, then I think it's worth going for.
And I do think as well, I've had a few sex therapists on my podcast, and there is a use it or lose it, isn't there, element to all of this. That actually, if you're in a relationship where you are having sex with somebody, you know, try to keep having sex with them, because it's getting out of the habit. I see that in various relationships that I know, friends.
And that's when you get drift, don't you? You just drift apart, and it is a great way of connecting. And, you know, like you, I've interviewed lots of sex therapists on my podcast, and it's, you know, when you talk about sex, it's not always penetrative sex. You know, sex can be many different things, you know, on a touching level, or that intimacy, that connection, that sharing, that connection. We need to think about sex in a much broader, you know, not just kind of the ins and outs of it, if you, you know, excuse the pun.
It's been fantastic to sit with you and share experiences and hear your wisdom and purpose. And, you know, having a purpose in life as you move forwards, I think, is really important. So before we go, just share a little bit of your thoughts on that.
It is. And I did a whole chapter on purpose. And I think as we age, you're obviously aware of the fragility of life and how fortunate we are to be here. But there comes a point when you think, oh, what's it all for? Why am I here? You know, am I leaving the world a better place than I found it? And why am I doing this? You know, and I don't want to get to the end of my life and be saying to myself, well, is that it? What was all that about? You know, I think there is a real need, a human need, to feel that we are valuable. And I think there is, they say it's greater to give than to receive. And I think that is true. You know, we you know, through volunteering or sharing somebody or an act of kindness, you feel great. One of the things I try and do with each of my five children is for that to be my legacy, in a way, is to say, find your purpose, you know, find your passion. What gets you up in the morning? And if you're fortunate enough to be able to make a living from it, then great. But otherwise, have it as a hobby. And maybe if you are semi-retired or you've got more time in later life, that's the time, if you haven't yet found your purpose, to really explore that and say, you know, what is lighting my fire? What do I want to do more of? What is going to get me up early to get that early morning train or whatever, or make that meeting with somebody? And we all have a reason for being here. We all have a purpose. And I think it's really important to spend a bit of time to find it and to really find the meaning of life, I guess.
And I think anybody I've met who I feel really has purpose, especially those who are kind of moving towards retirement years, they're so much more magnetic to be around, because their energy is so giving, you know, and you want to be with those people. So actually you'll just have so much more in your life as you get older, I think, which is, you want more, not less.
Absolutely. And the more you give, the more you get back, and you just live this abundant, joyful life. And I think if there's one message that I'd like to get across, it's that more joy is really achievable, and it's worth getting, because the more you have, the more you have then to share. So the more you have for yourself, your own personal benefit, but the more everybody else benefits from just being around you.
And you'll definitely have a better second half.
For sure.
Thank you so much, Liz.
Thank you. Oh my gosh, Gabby, what a joy it was to talk to you. It was really up close and personal, but you made it very easy for me to be kind of fearless and frank. And I hope that a lot of what I said will have resonated and given some useful takeaways, actually, that you can put into your own life, put into practice, things that are easy, simple, straightforward health hacks. But you know, when you add them all up, little changes that can make a really big difference. Well, if you feel that you have just been erratically muddling through midlife, do make sure that you're back here next week, because I will be answering your questions about your midlife struggles, everything from supplements to skincare, fat loss to family issues. So thank you for the emails and the voice notes. I'm really looking forward to having that conversation. And of course, you can continue to get in touch with the show. You can email podcast@lizarwellbeing.com. You can also find us on Instagram. Drop a comment to Lizarre Wellbeing on Instagram, or me personally at LizarreMe. And of course, you can pre-order your copy of A Better Second Half so that it arrives through your letterbox as soon as it is available on publication day. That's the 25th of April. I look forward to chatting next week. But until then, go well. Goodbye. This episode of the Liz Earle Wellbeing Show was presented by me, Liz Earle, and Gabby Logan. It was produced by Anushka Tate for Fresh Air Production, with additional production support from Ellie Smith.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.